Thank you, Mr. Heaney. As we approach the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, the story of the first few chapters of Exodus comes to life for us. It looms large in our thoughts and in our study and our reading. And some have asked the question, why did God treat the Egyptians so roughly? Why did he mete out 10 plagues on them? You know, there are those who refuse the God of the Bible because of stuff like this. How rude God was. How prejudiced God was. Who would worship a God that would torture all these innocent people is the way some tend to look at it. I mean, were they the worst people of all time? The worst people that the world has ever seen and as a result deserved 10 plagues? I mean, come on, wouldn't 3 or 4 be enough to get the point across? Today what we'll do, brethren, is examine the plagues that God poured out upon Egypt to come to understand them better and, more importantly, understand what the point of the plagues is for us and will be for the future. What does the Bible reveal that God says why he was going to deliver these plagues upon Egypt? We'll cover first 5 reasons that God seems to give in the Scripture that he poured out the plagues upon Egypt. The first is found in Exodus chapter 3, in verses 7 and 8, and that is, God poured out the plagues upon Egypt to deliver his people from slavery. To deliver his people from slavery. Exodus chapter 3, in verses 7 and 8 is where we'll read. You'll remember the story here. Moses was still in the wilderness. He was tending the flocks of his father-in-law, and he sees this burning bush, and he's curious about it because it burns and it burns and it burns and it's there all by itself, but it doesn't burn up. It doesn't stop burning. It just keeps going. Moses turns aside, of course, to see why this is the case. And God says, you're standing on holy ground because I'm here, so take your shoes off and show the proper respect. And so Moses did. Verse 7, the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. Now, if your Bible's like mine, you probably have that phrase underlined, for I know their sorrows. God is well aware of the sorrows that you deal with, that you might be feeling, that you might be going through. Literally, the word is, I know their pain. I know your pain. I feel your pain. You've heard that phrase before. So, verse 8, I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. So there were squatters on the land that would need to be displaced. But at this point, God says, I'm going to deliver my people from slavery. And we would often say, well, why plagues? Couldn't they just leave? Well, let's turn over to chapter 3 and verse 19. Down to verse 19. God says, but I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go, no, not even by a mighty hand. In other words, there was such stubbornness and such resistance to God on the part of Pharaoh and the Egyptians that it would take something, some things, very miraculous things, for them to allow God's people to leave that slavery. I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go, no, not even by a mighty hand. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my wonders. Human nature, you see, is particularly stubborn and stiff-necked. And it takes sometimes very grievous trials, difficulties, curses for humans to actually acknowledge God. So I'll strike Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in its midst. And after that, he will let you go. So God was going to pour out the plagues so that his people could be delivered from slavery. Turn over to Exodus chapter 6. Exodus chapter 6, in verse 1. As we begin to read through these plagues, the points, the reasons God gave these plagues, I'd like you not only to think about your preparation for the Passover, but I'd also like you to think about God's dealing with humanity as a whole. Will these things be repeated or similar things? Exodus 6 and verse 1, then the Lord said to Moses, now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand he will let them go, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land. So from the point of I'm not going to let you go to pushing them out of the land with a strong get out of here would be quite a contrast. Notice down in verse 5, and I have also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. He promised to spring them free and give them the land that he had promised to Abraham. Now, we see here, of course, we've often talked about how Pharaoh is a type of Satan the devil. But notice here, it's not just Pharaoh. In the middle of verse 5, it says, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage. If it was just Pharaoh, then you deal with just Pharaoh. But because it's the entire culture of the Egyptians that were holding Israel in captivity, in slavery, they all would need to receive of these plagues to change their approach and let God's people go. Notice a second reason why God says he gave the plagues, poured out the plagues upon Egypt. And that was this, to answer Pharaoh's question. Have you ever been told, be careful of the questions you ask because you may not like the answer? You may not be prepared for the answer? Or as one famous movie line said, you can't handle it. The truth. Exodus 5 in verse 2. What was the question that Pharaoh asked that he didn't realize the seriousness of the question that he was asking? And he seems to have stated it in a rather sarcastic manner. The question is in Exodus chapter 5 in verse 2. In verse 1, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, thus says the eternal God of Israel, Yahweh, let my people go that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness. And Pharaoh asked the question, who is Yahweh? Who is God, that God, that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? Now, we mentioned that we'd like you to think not just about your Passover and unleavened bread preparation, but think about the long-term implications of this. We have a world today who asks the same question. Who is God that I should obey him? Who is this Yahweh? Pharaoh was asking. The world around us does not know God. They don't know the Father. Christ said one of the reasons he came to the earth was to reveal the Father. He still is not understood by most in the world. So they're saying, well, who is this God? Well, even if there is a God, that I should obey him. How many around are keeping this hour holy, as you are, very few. They don't wish to obey God. So who is Yahweh? Who is the Lord that I should obey His voice to let Israel go? I do not know Yahweh, nor will I let Israel go. Bad mistake. Pharaoh was going to receive an answer to that question. By the time the 10 plagues were done, he would know who God was. And again, you look forward into the future. Why would a loving God pour out a tribulation upon the earth? Why would millions of people, nay, maybe billions of people, need to die? Why would a God of love do such a thing? Well, because this very same question has to be answered. And most carnal minds do not understand anything except superior force. Suddenly, they can begin to conceive something they hadn't thought of before. Exodus chapter 7, in verse 5. Exodus chapter 7, in verse 5. Look at verse 4, "But Pharaoh will not heed you, so that I may lay my hand on Egypt and bring my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. And the Egyptians shall know." The Egyptians, not just Pharaoh, but all the Egyptians who had this deeply seated cultural prejudice against Israelites. They were slaves. They were inferior. They're to be held in check. "The Egyptians shall know that I am Yahweh, the Eternal, when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the children of Israel from among them." The carnal mind will not acknowledge God until that kind of situation has to come upon them. And what a sad situation that is. Don't we all, as parents, desire that our children learn the easy way so they don't have to have something more difficult come upon them, whether it's discipline, whether it's a sad circumstance to help them learn the lesson? Exodus chapter 8 and verse 22, over a page or so in your Bible. Exodus 8 in verse 22. "And in that day," God says, "I will set apart the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there." Why? "In order that you may know that I am the Eternal in the midst of the land." You will know. What are they then saying up there? Well, who's Yahweh? Who's God? Who's the Eternal that we should obey Him? Pretty soon they'll be saying, now we know who He is, and we better do what He says. And He says, let these people go, we better do it. Again, we project forward into the future, and we see implications for the world as a whole. No wonder God has to bring a tribulation upon the earth. No wonder plagues have to be poured out, because until that time is literally felt by those individuals, they will spurn God and literally or physically or colloquially thumb their nose at God. Exodus chapter 9 in verse 14. Exodus 9 verse 14, the last part of verse 13, "Let my people go that they may serve me. For at this time I will send all my plagues to your very heart." Sadly, the carnal mind often does not submit itself to God until they are cut to the heart. And it would take all 10 plagues to get to Pharaoh's heart and to the Egyptians' heart. Now, some certainly began to see before and let these people go. Can't you see what's happening to our nation? They're begging Pharaoh. But others would take all the way through plague number 10. "At this time, I will send all my plagues to your very heart, and on your servants and on your people, that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth." So God poured out these plagues to answer the question, who is God that I should obey him? And there will be in the future plagues poured out to answer this very question, who is God that I should obey him? We'll talk more about that as we go along. A third reason that God says he poured out the plagues upon Egypt is to show Israel who God was, or God is, we might say. To show Israel who God is. We have to remember that Israel had been in captivity for 400 years, or at least in Egypt 400 years. And they had, in some respects, little knowledge of God. They had to be taught very basic things like the Sabbath, for example, after they left Egypt. So they, in all likelihood, were not keeping it while in Egypt. Notice Exodus chapter 6 in verse 7. Exodus 6 in verse 7. Of course, Moses was told in verse 6, Exodus 6 in verse 6, "Therefore say to the children of Israel, I am Yahweh, I am the Eternal. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will rescue you from their bondage. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments." Why would God need to make those statements? Were they looking to other gods at that time to rescue them? No. He says, I, four times there. I'm the God that will do this. Verse 7, "I will take you as my people," indicating that were they not looking to God as his people? Some weren't, certainly. Some certainly were. "I will take you as my people, and I will be your God." What's one of the things that constantly had to be done in Israel? They had to be reminded, put away these foreign gods. So they didn't have it all together, did they? They had to be shown who God was. So God would pour out these plagues upon the Egyptians to also show Israel who the true God was. "Then you shall know that I am, that I, the Eternal, your God, who brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I'll bring you into the land which I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'll give it to you as a heritage. I am the Eternal," or I, Yahweh. I'm the one. So Israel likewise had to be shown. And isn't it interesting that the plagues that will come in the future will likewise reinforce to God's people that God really is in charge, that he really does powerfully intervene in world affairs. Much of God's intervention in our day and age has been what? Behind the scenes, wouldn't you say? Orchestrating things in general. But these outward signs and show of God's power are yet in the future. And it will strengthen our faith at that time. Exodus chapter 10 in verse 2. Exodus chapter 10 in verse 2. We'll read verse 1 for background. "Now the Eternal said to Moses, go into Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the hearts of his servants, that I may show these signs of mine before him. And that you may tell in your hearing, in the hearing of your son and your son's son, the mighty things I have done in Egypt." So, by passing these stories of what God had done to the son and to the son's son would be an acknowledgement of who God is. It would keep God at the forefront of their cultural story. Goes on to say, "Tell your son and your son's sons the mighty things I have done in Egypt and my signs which I have done among them." Why? "That you may know that I am the Eternal." I am the Yahweh, the Eternal. "Tell your sons and your son's son." I have a little story about that when we get to some of the plagues we'll talk about. So, a third reason God gave the plagues to Israel, to Egypt, was to show Israel who God is. Fourth reason is to show that the earth belongs to God. The earth belongs to God. Chapter 9, in verse 16. Chapter 9 and verse 16. You might recall that in ancient times, it was very common for cultures to have the idea that certain gods had authority and power over certain geography, or in some cases, over certain features, like gods of a particular region, God of the hills, or you have God of the sky, God of the moisture, God of the water, God of the land, etc., etc. God was going to be showing by his command of all of these things that he was God over the whole earth. The earth belongs to him. Chapter 9 and verse 16, but indeed for this purpose God says, I have raised you up that I may show my power in you, and that my name may be declared in all the earth. Our God is not a regional God over a certain portion of creation. He is the Creator God. Notice down in verse 29. So Moses said to him, as soon as I have gone out of the city, I will spread out my hands to the eternal. The thunder will cease. There will be no more hail, that you may know that the earth is the Lord's, is the eternal's, is Yahweh's. So God was showing his absolute superiority. And again, as we've said, as we look off into the future, human carnal mind will not accept God's power until it is undeniable, until it is so overwhelming that it has to be acknowledged. So God shows by controlling all these forces that he is God over the entire earth. Turning to chapter 12, there is one more reason, a fifth reason that we understand from the scripture that God poured out the plagues upon Egypt. And that is to execute judgment on, quote, all the gods of Egypt. To execute judgment on all the gods of Egypt. You see, it was not enough to show that God was the most powerful. He also desired to display that none of the other gods were really gods at all. They were all false gods. And so each of the plagues dealt with certain of the Egyptian deities to show that they were not gods at all. Exodus 12 and verse 12. Here is the death of the firstborn. I will pass through the land of Egypt, Exodus 12:12, on that night, and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. Why would God do these terrible things to Egypt? For the reasons we've just described. And to show that these other gods, the things that humans hold up as gods, are really worthless. So it would take all of these plagues, and then finally the death of the firstborn, for the Egyptians to truly come to grasp that. We'll execute judgment against all the gods of Egypt, for I am the Eternal. He's the one over all. I'd like you to turn out of Exodus to the book of Numbers. Numbers 33 in verse 4. We've described this before. Numbers 33 is kind of the travel log of ancient Israel as they left Egypt and their Sabbath stops through the wilderness. So each of these places are listed, dots on the map, we might say, how Israel traveled out of Egypt. That's not why we'll look at this chapter. We want to look at verse 3. They departed from Ramses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month. On the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in sight of all the Egyptians. For the Egyptians were burying, verse 4, all their firstborn, whom the Eternal had killed among them. Also, on their gods, the Eternal had executed judgments. So what we'd like to do is look at each of the plagues and give a very brief summary of the gods that God embarrassed, the gods that the true God showed were not gods at all. In other words, every aspect of the Egyptian society was dismantled one point at a time to show that God is the true God, that none of the things that you humans put your hope in has any hope at all. Not one of them. Let's look at a few of those. First of all, Exodus chapter 7, in verse 16. Back to the book of Exodus. Exodus 7 in verses 16 and 17. The first plague were the rivers, primarily the Nile River, turned to blood. Exodus 7 in verse 16. Let's pick it up in verse 15. Go to Pharaoh in the morning when he goes out to the water, and you shall stand by the river's bank to meet him. And the rod which was turned into a serpent you shall take in your hand. Verse 16, you shall say to him, the eternal God of the Hebrews has sent me to you, saying, let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. But indeed, until now, you would not hear. Thus says the eternal, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, I will strike the waters which are in the river with the rod that is in my hand, and they shall be turned to blood. So the water being turned to blood. The first plague was directed against the Nile itself, which the Egyptians worshipped as their source of life. The Nile had several gods associated with it, but they all proved to be completely helpless before the true God. The plague confronted the river deities. Kum was supposed to be the guardian of the source of the Nile. Hapi was supposed to be the spirit of the Nile, personified as the waters of the Nile. And the god of fertility. And Osiris, the god of the underworld, whose blood was considered to make up the Nile. All of these various thoughts ran through the Egyptians' mind. But when the river turned against them and all the fish in it died, they were supposed to be protected by at least two other gods of the Egyptians. Moses was not only showing that these gods had no power, God showing through Moses, but they should not be worshipped, but that God controls the source of life. Without water, there cannot be life as we know it. Cannot be. So, by turning the Nile into blood, God struck at some of the most important and basic gods of the Egyptians. Now, we ask ourselves, as we project ahead into the future, how about humanity today? What is one of the things God will do very early on in dealing with humanity during the time that we know of as the time of the plagues, the Great Tribulation, the seven trumpet plagues, the seven last plagues? What is one thing God deals with very quickly? He strikes the water. Again, because people, as long as they seem content, tend not to look to God. Take water out of their hands, out of their wells, out of their faucets, and you see a whole different story, do you not? Some of our friends in Texas recently experienced that, where you always assume that when you turn the spigot or touch the dial or however your particular thing works, water is going to come pouring out. It's just absolutely taken for granted. But when that's not available, what a different thing that is. What a helpless thing that is. Sad but true. So the Nile turned to blood will be repeated in essence, in one sense, in the future, to help people understand who controls the source of life. It is the great God of the universe. The second plague in Exodus chapter 8, verses 1 and 2, is the plague of the frogs. The Eternal spoke to Moses, "Go to Pharaoh and say to him, 'Thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, I will smite all your territory with frogs.'" Now, this must have been seen at first as a joke. Ooh, frogs. I'm really scared of frogs. Not a problem unless there are billions of them. And they're everywhere and in everything. Now, interestingly, the frog symbol, well, the frog itself was a god to the Egyptians. The goddess Heket, symbol of good crops and childbirth, guess what, was depicted as a woman with a frog's head. Now, I could think of a lot more flattering ways to depict the fertility goddess, but that's what they did. The frog's head on top of this woman. Isis, another fertility goddess. Frogs were sacred. They reproduced so quickly. They were sacred to the Egyptians. And they symbolized good health of the river and of the water. And so when all that began to turn against them, they become these rotting piles of stinking death. It must have really shaken some of the Egyptians. Now, interestingly enough, as you remember the story, the Egyptians' magicians were able to mimic this miracle, and they could produce frogs as well. And you have to think that God must have smiled. To me, it shows part of the sense of humor that God had. He allows these magicians, "Yeah, go ahead, make some more frogs." Like, wait, that's not, we don't need more frogs. So God must have kind of just been chuckling, "Sure, go ahead, make some more frogs, see how that helps the situation." They weren't able to take any away, but they were able to make more. Well, great, that doesn't do anybody any good. So again, we ask as we look into the future, God talks about how children will be a curse to society rather than a wonderful blessing. So the goddess of fertility that's been worshipped so much is represented in this plague, where suddenly children become a curse. They're misbehaving, they're unruly, they can't be controlled, they're unfeeling, they're causing all kinds of problems. I mean, you know, today there are places that are called senior communities. Well, what does that mean? I mean, we don't want children here, because children are a curse to some people. Now, we have a spectacular congregation here where our children are an awesome blessing. And we really appreciate them. We love them very much, and we see the beautiful potential that children who are guided and taught and led in God's way can be awesome. And we're very thankful for that, but not so in much of the culture. Let's go on to the third plague in Exodus 8, verse 16. Down in verse 16, the plague of the lice. Now, again, the word lice, it's not clear exactly what was this little bug. Was it a gnat? Was it a mosquito? Was it literally the body lice or head lice? That could have been the case as well. Nonetheless, in verse 16, "So the Lord said to Moses, 'Say to Aaron, stretch out your rod and strike the dust of the land, so that it may become lice throughout all the land of Egypt.'" Again, the word lice in this situation might be gnats. And if you've ever been in a situation where gnats are buzzing around you constantly, it is extremely irritating. If it's mosquitoes, that's very challenging as well. I remember one time I went turkey hunting with a friend, and the area was just swarming. I mean, swarming. I don't think I've ever been in a spot where there have been more mosquitoes. And to have them just constantly buzzing and all over, it's just unnerving. If you've ever been to northern Minnesota in certain parts of watered areas and have a black fly infestation, I mean, it's horrible. I mean, these things, these no-see-ums, they bite and they draw blood. You can't even see where they are. They drive you crazy. And that seems to be what was going on here. Something of such a small little thing would cause such a huge problem. We look ahead to plagues, or maybe we're looking at a current plague and wonder how something so small and so tiny can cause such difficulties along the way. Will there be plagues like that in the future coming up out of the quote-unquote dust of the earth? that may be the case. Let's go on to the fourth plague, the plague of flies in verse 20. Chapter 8 and verse 20, the Eternal said to Moses, "Rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh as he comes out to the water." That was part of their worship service. He would come out in the water to the Nile each morning and go through his various religious oblations of washings and worshiping the god of the Nile. The god of the Nile had already turned against him, but he still went out anyway. "Then say to him, 'Thus says the Eternal, let my people go, that they may serve me, or else if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send you swarms.'" And that's all the Hebrew says, is just swarms. Now we've added flies, thinking that's probably what's being talked about. "Flies or swarms on you, on your servants, on your people, into your houses. The houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms, and also the ground on which they stand." So now, again, whether it's the Hebrew word is Arab, and whether it refers to flies literally, or bugs of whatever sort, flying bugs. Some think it was the scarab just multiplying incredibly. And as a result, then these giant swarms of insects. I don't know about you, but I don't mind insects, just not on me, around me, near me. You get something, you ever have a, like, remember when our children were little, my daughter got into our little minivan one day after a softball practice, and a June bug accompanied her. And I got these scratchy legs, and so that thing was on her hair, and it got onto her neck, and she just about had a cow. Kicking all over the place. You know, that little drink holder that pops out, you know, that holds your Coca-Cola or whatever it is, your coffee. She kicked that thing into tomorrow. And it was never, they just snapped that thing right off of there. Can you imagine billions of bugs, whether they were flies or, again, gnats, whether they were beetles or whatever it might have been, just irritating. Not deadly oven by themselves, but just absolutely irritating. That God has control over each of these things. It is an interesting thing to see. Let's go on to the fifth plague, murrain. In other words, the plague on the livestock. Exodus 9, in verses 1 and 2. "Then the Eternal said to Moses, 'Go unto Pharaoh, tell him, thus says the Eternal God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let them go and still hold them, behold, the hand of the Eternal will be upon your cattle in the field, on the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the oxen, the sheep, a very severe pestilence.'" It is interesting that the livestock that provided food, produced milk, clothing, transportation, all of those things would be removed. And isn't it interesting that so many times people put stock in livestock, in the stuff that they have. That's where they put their stock, in their transportation. That day and age, your horse dies, you've got a major problem. This day and age, your car dies, you have a major problem. Will God curse transportation? Will he make it such what humans will have to acknowledge him? Now, we could talk about the various gods, Apis and Hathor and others that the Egyptians worshipped that had cow-like images to them, but they were all shown to be powerless before the true God. In other words, their gods could not even protect their food supply. God controls that. Will God in the future deal with humanity's food supply? You bet he will. There's times of trouble ahead that without God's protection, without acknowledging the true God, it will be hopeless for much of humanity. How about the next plague in verse 8, the boils? Exodus 9 in verse 8. "So the Eternal said to Moses and Aaron, 'Take for yourselves handfuls of ashes from a furnace.'" Some feel these would have been the ashes from the brick furnaces that the Israelites would have used to make brick. "Take handfuls of ashes from a furnace and let Moses scatter it toward the heavens in the sight of Pharaoh. How many are familiar with LeBron James and his famous baby powder routine? You know, he throws the powder off. Oh, yeah, big deal. Well, this is something very serious. Moses throws this dust, this ash, up into the air, and it says it will cause boils that break out in sores on man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt. Not only can their gods not protect their food supply, their gods cannot protect their health. So the impotence of the Egyptian gods became very clear. Their gods that normally would have been looked to for healing simply had no power at all. When I read about the boils, I always think last year when we were working with our grandson, going over the plagues and what God was doing and why he was doing that. Some here had put together some really wonderful little packages about the plagues and how to use them to teach our children. So we had little Conrad, and I think it was in the package, was half a dozen or 10 or 12 Cheerios. And if you lick one side of the Cheerio, it becomes a little mushy, and it sticks very well to those little hairless arms and hairless cheeks. And so we had these Cheerios all over Conrad. And, you know, it talks about teaching your son and your son's son God's way. And so we've got just the cutest little picture of little Conrad there with all these boils, Cheerio boils all over his little body. So that was really cute and kind of funny. But we said, Conrad, you got to make a sad face because it looked these would really hurt. So he has this precious little picture of him and his sad face. Well, the Egyptians were not covered with Cheerios. They had terrible boils, so much so that they just suffered intensely. In verse 10, it says, Moses scattered them toward heaven. They caused boils that broke out in sores on man and beast. In verse 11, the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils were on the magicians and all the Egyptians. Not just boils, but painful sores, oozing. You know, who knows all that was involved with this? Point was, God will control the earth. He will control people's physical well-being. And there would be some at this point that would begin, when they start to personally suffer, that would begin to acknowledge the true God. So we all, of course, continue to pray that we are not needing a trial like that for us to acknowledge the true God. Certainly God will, in the future, we'll see that in a few moments, deal with people's physical health to teach them something very important about him. The seventh plague, hail, in verse 22, chapter 9 and verse 22. The Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, on man and on beast, on every herb of the field throughout the land of Egypt. So Moses stretched out his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire darted to the ground. So it sounds more like lightning strikes, just repeated lightning strikes, causing fire in the midst of this hailstorm. And the Eternal rained hail on the land of Egypt. Cecil B. DeMille's version is that the hail was actually balls of fire as well. I don't know that that's the case, because it says here fire darted to the ground. So it sounds more like lightning in the midst of this hailstorm. Verse 24, so there was hail and fire mingled with the hail, so very heavy that there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And the hail struck throughout the whole land of Egypt, all that was in the field, both man and beast. The hail struck every herb of the field and broke every tree of the field. So we're talking baseball, softball, basketball-sized balls of hail, smashing everything around. A stunning miracle. Will God control the environment in the future to teach humanity submission to him? Well, we'll see if that's the case or not. Again, Baal was the storm god and could not defend the Egyptians here through this lightning storm of hail and lightning. Let's look at number 8, locusts in chapter 10. chapter 10 and verse 12. Some of the Egyptians by this time are really starting to get the point. We're being destroyed. Let these people go. But Pharaoh would not. Verse 12, the Eternal said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, that they may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of all the land, all that the hail has left. So Moses stretched out his hand, or his rod, over the land of Egypt, and the Eternal brought an east wind on the land all that day and all that night, and when it was morning, the east wind brought the locusts. And the locusts went up over all the land of Egypt and rested on all the territory of Egypt, and they were very severe. Previously, there had been no such locusts as they, nor shall there be such after them. So either it was so thick, or God created a special variety for this purpose to just completely decimate the land. Verse 15, for they covered the face of the whole earth, so the land was darkened. The swarm so large it blocked out the sun. And they ate every herb of the land and all the fruit of the trees which the hail had left. So there remained nothing green on the trees or on the plants of the fields throughout all the land of Egypt. So again, God deals with the food source. And he actually deals with the environment in such a way that there is absolutely no hope for the future without turning to God. Destroys things so thoroughly, there is no hope except turning to the true God. Isn't it interesting how stubborn human nature can be, that we have to have no other option before we turn to the true God? The plague of darkness was next in verse 21, chapter 9 and verse 21. The Eternal said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt. Darkness which may be even felt. Some commentators mentioned that this darkness was so cold and so dark and so moist and so clammy that even candles or lanterns that were lit would not stay lit. That's how dark it became. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days, and they did not see one another. Again, was it so dark that lanterns could not even be continued to be lit? Nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days, so dark. But all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. So this ninth plague covered the greatest of the Egyptian gods, Amun-Ra, the sun god, the principal deity of the Egyptian pantheon. He was the source that made all growth possible. Pharaoh himself called himself the sun, S-O-N, of the S-U-N, son of the sun god. With 3 days of darkness, the principal deity was completely embarrassed, shown to be not a true god at all. He was the one who was supposed to bring light and heat and warmth and growth, and he could do none of those things. And then, of course, we have the final plague, the death of the firstborn. In chapter 11, in verse 4, chapter 11, verse 4, Moses said, thus says the Eternal, about midnight I'll go out into the land of Egypt, or the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. From the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the female servant who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of animals. The only way the Egyptians would truly acknowledge God is if they suffered this saddest of all plagues, the tenth plague, the death of the firstborn. It was important for Pharaoh to understand that his son died just like an animal. What a sad thing to have to happen to a person to get the point. His own son sacrificed, we might say, on the altar of pride and stubbornness. How sad that is. The tenth plague, the death of the firstborn, was an attack on the divinity of Pharaoh. God put Pharaoh in his place. He put the sun god in his place. The god that was supposed to give all life had absolutely no power over the true God. So it is very clear what God had in mind as he judged the gods of Egypt. Turn with me, if you would, to the book of Revelation. Revelation chapter 8. You know, as we prepare for the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, we review these spectacular truths, the stories as they unfolded, and ask God to help us glean lessons from each of them. Notice Revelation 8 and verse 1. There is coming a time in the future of great plagues once again. We might say that God has been relatively quiet over the past couple thousand years when it comes to spectacular things like this. And yet he's recorded these events to show us that it will happen. And he's giving us a timeline saying, it's not too distant future, I am going to step in again. And just as I showed who I was during the time of the Israelites and the Egyptians, I will once again show who I am. Revelation 8 in verse 1. When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. The things that John saw and heard and that the others saw were so stunning that their voice was taken away, we might say. They were speechless. I saw, verse 2, the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Then another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. And he was given much incense that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. And we go on down to verse 6. So the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. And the first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood. Interesting. We have a plague of hail and fire given to the Egyptians. We have the plague of the blood, the water turning to blood, of several of these combined. What are the lessons God is teaching humanity? The same kinds of lessons that the Egyptians were to learn. They were thrown to the earth, middle of verse 7, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. Then the second angel sounded. Something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. So what is God doing? He's taking away the things that people depend on, the things that people look to instead of the true God. What do they look to? Well, the green grass, grass-fed things. God takes that away. Part of the sea becomes blood. A third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. In the same way God destroyed the Nile temporarily, he will do the same to the sea. The third angel sounded, a great star fell from heaven like a burning torch and fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. So not just the salt water, but the fresh water as well. The name of the star was Wormwood. A third of the waters became wormwood or bitter, and many men died from the water because it was made bitter. The fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. Interesting, we had how many days of darkness in Egypt? What was God trying to teach? That he has control over the very light that gives light to the earth. A third of the day it did not shine, and likewise the night. And I looked and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the remaining blasts of the trumpets of the three angels who are about to sound." The fifth angel sounded, a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key of the bottles. He opened it, smoke arose, smoke like a great furnace. The sun was darkened, the air because of what came out of the pit. And you know the story. They were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth or any green thing or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. They were not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months. So the future, God again begins to touch people's physical body as well, so that they begin to acknowledge who gives you life, who runs this universe. Verse 15, the four angels who had been prepared for the hour and the day of the month and the year were released to kill a third of mankind. To kill a third of mankind. It's incredible. God is showing, like the Egyptians were shown, that God has power over all life. And he will step in to show his authority. Turn over to chapter 15 in verse 1. Revelation 15 and verse 1, then I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having the seven last plagues in them, for in them the wrath of God is complete. Now we won't take the time to go through all of the seven last plagues, but I think you'll find that we will have many of the same issues brought to God or to people's attention by the great God of the universe. So as we examine this and we look to the future, knowing that these things are coming, what do we personally learn? What do we personally learn from the plagues? You know, we could say something like, well, God is God. Well, that's true. But let's get a few more specific things as we close. First lesson that you and I can draw out of the plagues of the past and the plagues of the future is that God is drawing out a people from slavery. Knowing what has been and knowing what will come hopefully will inspire us to do our part. That maybe now more than ever before, we understand better what God is expecting of us. He's expecting of us to be the people that will be drawn out of slavery, that will come out of this world. What does it say? Separate yourselves or be partakers of her plagues. We'll be separated out so that we can serve and help them when the plagues come to them. When people have no understanding, why is this happening? You'll be able to help them. Egypt, we know, is a type of sin. It's a type of the way of the life of the world. We're coming out of that. We're separating ourselves from that. That's what makes it so challenging and so sad when some of God's people get so involved in political machinations out there. That's the world. It's not God's way. It's part of the world. Get out of the world. Get out of that. Stay away from that. A type of sin, and it can suck people in, thinking that, well, I'm just going for the politician that's the best of the worst. Excuse me? Get away from that. Get out of it. It's a type of sin. Pharaoh, a type of Satan. So get away. Draw out from that slavery. Number two, God will act on behalf of his people. Second lesson that you and I can apply today, God will act on behalf of his people. The mighty acts that God has recorded are to remind us that God will act on our behalf. He will rescue. He will take care of us. He will always do what is best for us at the perfect time. He will never leave us or forsake us. God will always act on behalf of his people at the perfect time. Number three, no force can stand against God. No force can stand against God. If God is with us, as Paul said, who can be against us? Or better yet, what does it matter who is against us? God is all-powerful. No matter what obstacle we face, our God is more than able to remove it. If not remove it, to guide us through it. There is no sin that we might be entangled in that God is not able to help us out of, to draw us out of. Turning to him in total submission, he will give us the help that we need to escape. And last but not least, number four, God expects us to trust and to follow. God expects us to trust and to follow. In the same way Abraham trusted and followed when he was told to move, we'll all do the same. Our basic attitude of conversion is submission. God requires that we submit to him and follow him out of Egypt. So we must be on the move. We must be doing. We must take action. So over the next few weeks, we'll be removing leaven from our homes as an action. We'll replace it with what is unleavened as an action to remind ourselves of the spiritual lessons involved. We must trust and follow. We must know that we can overcome sin with God's help, with God's Holy Spirit. God expects that we'll exercise our effort in that struggle to be like Him. So, brethren, the plagues upon Egypt and the plagues that will yet come carry great lessons for us all as we prepare for the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread this year. Let's remember and apply the point of the plagues.